I have Lee Bratcher here. Lee Bratcher is the president and founder of the Texas Blockchain Council and recently was at the NAPE, the North American Prospects Expo, biggest oil and gas conference on earth. I was there on stage with Governors Abbott and Stitt of Texas and Oklahoma. We were talking about oil and gas, but NAPE is doing a lot more now, and blockchain is a part of it. Interestingly, I did not know Texas is the Bitcoin mining capital of the world. I just learned this by reviewing Lee Bratcher and the Texas Blockchain Council's website, learning something new every day. Did I tell you this? I said, Texas is the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. Texas is the Saudi Arabia of oil these days. Texas is the Saudi Arabia of wind energy, whether I like that or not. Texas is the Saudi Arabia of Bitcoin. You know what? Like, people get sick and tired, I'm sure, of hearing us brag. I should probably stop it. In fact, I don't want them to come here because they bring bad politics when they immigrate half the time. Actually, it's not true. They're a little bit more than half very clear-thinking people coming to the state. But back to Lee and back to Texas Blockchain Council, which is an industry association with more than 100 member companies and hundreds of individuals that wants to make Texas the jurisdiction of choice for Bitcoin and blockchain innovation. So welcome to the show, Lee.
Jackie, thanks for having me on.
Good to have you here. Okay, so we have to start seriously with just the very basics, nuts and bolts. Explain, what is blockchain and what is Bitcoin?
Sure. So Bitcoin is a decentralized peer-to-peer asset that was invented in 2008, and it relies on what's called a blockchain, which is a ledger technology. Blockchains are decentralized digital ledgers. So if we think about double entry accounting and how we've accounted for value transfer over the last several centuries, we've used double entry accounting, which was developed 500 years ago by Luca Pacioli in the Renaissance. Blockchain and Bitcoin more specifically are the next iteration, if you will, of value transfer technology.
Okay. So people have a hard time getting their mind around Bitcoin mining. I was watching Stuart Varney on Fox Business, which I enjoy him a lot. And, you know, I'm kind of like him. I'm kind of an old-fashioned commodities girl. It's my favorite investment to think about and talk about. Very nuts and bolts, very physical. You can put your hands on it. And so it's difficult for people to know what you're talking about when you talk about mining Bitcoin. Explain, because I know you're nearby in Denton, Texas, and Senator Cruz will be there soon to take a tour. I'm going to take a tour. I'm probably wearing my Come and Mine It t-shirt you just gave me, which is super cool. Got the Texas cannon on here, going off the come and take it theme of Texas since the revolution. So, okay, explain what I would see in Denton, Texas when I visit the Bitcoin mining facility.
Sure. There are actually more than 30 Bitcoin mining facilities across the state of Texas, 2,800 megawatts worth of Bitcoin mining here in the state. And you know, when people think about Bitcoin and think, well, it's not backed by anything physical like other commodities like gold or oil, it is interesting. Bitcoin is backed by energy. It takes energy to mine Bitcoin, takes energy to secure the Bitcoin network through nodes. So Bitcoin is decentralized. That means there's not any centralized entity that's updating the ledger. The ledger is updated every 10 minutes with all the transactions that have taken place in that 10-minute period through a consensus mechanism called proof of work. And proof of work is essentially a system where you're running computers that are using an algorithm called SHA-256. It was developed by the NSA decades ago. This algorithm, as you get more computers on the network, it gets increasingly difficult to get the target number. So some people equate it to solving a math equation. That's not precisely true, but that's a good frame, like a good mental model to think about it. These computers are guessing trillions and trillions of combinations to try to get under a target number to be able to solve the next block. And if a miner solves a block, all the other nodes and all the other players in the network, all the other computers, are able to see that that block was solved, and it was solved accurately. All the transactions that are being added in that 10-minute period, you know, I sent you half a Bitcoin, that is updated on the ledger. I'm debited half a Bitcoin, you're credited half a Bitcoin. That is all updated on the ledger, and it comes to consensus within a matter of seconds. Everybody else is able to see, yes, this is a this miner solved the block, and they are adding transactions to the network that are true and valid. If there are any incorrect transactions, that block will be discarded, and that miner will lose the privilege of adding that next block. And miners are incentivized to do that by what's called the block reward. So every 10 minutes when these transactions are added, 6.25 Bitcoin are then received by the miner that was able to solve the block. And 6.25 Bitcoin, with Bitcoin at $60,000, almost seven, probably as of today, it's about $68,000 per coin. It's a substantial, you know, monetary incentive to secure the network.
Okay, so back to Stuart Varney saying, I don't know what this mining's all about. In other words, when I go to Denton, Texas, no one's going to be breaking dirt with a shovel. There are going to be computers. I will see computers.
That's right.
I will see human beings at computers. And those people are going to be essentially like virtually mining with information, as opposed to physically mining with physical anything.
That's right. You'll see a data
other
center.
Other than a computer.
You essentially see a data center. If you've been to a hyperscaler cloud computing data center, or like an AI data center with GPUs, this will be a data center. Most Bitcoin mining data centers use ASICs, or they all use ASICs at this point, which are application-specific integrated circuits. They're going to look like an old-fashioned desktop that we used to have in the 2000s, early 2000s. They're going to be probably twice as heavy, and you're going to see thousands of them. And they're going to be stacked in racks, data center racks.
So how large is this place?
There are three buildings, and you know, any Bitcoin mine is going to vary in size, because sometimes they're modular. You put them in like a shipping container and put them out the well pad, and you mine using excess gas. You mine using formerly flared gas with a generator, essentially.
Okay.
But this is an on-grid site, so it's going to be the size of a football field.
Okay. So, all right, that's a whole lot of information already, even just getting started. And I've got to go to break in 2 minutes. So with that in mind, okay, very good. So, again, Denton, Texas, we are going to, in the next segment, I want to really, really, really connect this. You just mentioned natural gas. Okay, I talk about oil and gas probably mostly, more than anything else, some nuclear. But we need to connect for people the virtual information to the physical
commodity.
Basically, you're going to explain to us in the next segment what flaring gas has to do with running the Bitcoin mining, because... And I'm sure you hear this incessantly right now. Everyone's saying, okay, AI and Bitcoin mining are energy hogs, right? And so Texas, as it happens, has more energy probably than any other state, maybe Alaska or California, our competitors. I guess Pennsylvania has okay, there are a lot of energy states. But the point is, we have a lot of it here. But our grid famously doesn't have enough. Frequently, we're being told, caution, you know, turn off your dishwashers, cut your excess energy use, you know, turn down your thermostat or whichever direction it needs to go. And so that would be a big concern of Texans. I know Texas is the Bitcoin mining capital of the world. I'm going to start repeating that a lot. The Bitcoin mining capital of the world. And if you're just joining us, we reviewed the very basics. What is Bitcoin? What is blockchain? If you missed it, catch this on the podcast where you can rewind and hear segment one and understand the very basics of what we're talking about. What I'm going to do now is connect that conversation, which was all about, you know, this exchange of information. It's literally a lot of computers running in Denton, Texas, and elsewhere. There are many facilities in Texas. So something has to power Bitcoin mining. And in Texas, we're this unique state for a lot of reasons. We have our own grid. So in my eyes, that's really good because we can control it. We can make it better. I'm very concerned about grid protection, grid security, whether we're protecting against hacking or protecting against physical attack on the grid or weaponry that can harm the grid, simulate a solar flare that can fry the grid. There's a lot that can go wrong with the grid. So I'm always talking about it. And so aside from harm, there's this management issue where Texas, strangely, even though we have all this energy, like we are on top of a sea of natural gas, somehow we can't manage to get it where it needs to go. Sometimes during winter storms or the height of the summer heat. And I know that Bitcoin mining requires a lot of power. On your website, you talk about how it can actually protect the grid or reinforce the grid. So explain that.
We have some constraints, right? Energy is only as good, or the electron is only as good as the time and place that you can utilize it, right?
Right.
And so we have so much energy in West Texas, really across the state, but our transmission capacity and the time of day and the energy consumption patterns of, you know, societies all across the world don't necessarily always line up to, you know, our generation patterns. And with the Biden administration's federal subsidy on renewables, that creates additional problems because we have overbuilt renewables and then we have grid congestion. We have more generation than we can get to major population centers. And that wasn't just the Biden administration. That's been in play for a long time. So that's created challenges. There's not enough natural gas generation in the state of Texas because of those the market incentives around $30 a megawatt hour for every megawatt hour of renewables you have. So essentially, Bitcoin mining comes in as an location agnostic load. So sort of a load center, if you will, that you can put in parts of Texas where we have grid congestion, putting it on the opposite side of grid congestion to soak up that excess energy. And also, Bitcoin miners are time agnostic. They don't care when they run. The rest of us, we use a lot of electricity in the mornings and in the afternoons. Overnight, we hardly use any. And that's really hard for a grid operator because they have to be prepared for these big peaks. But then also, there's these troughs of low usage where the combined cycle generation, the base load generation, if you will, is going to be losing money because there's not enough demand. So Bitcoin miners are happy to soak up excess demand in the low demand times and in the low demand locations, and they're happy to turn off, and they don't have to be asked to turn off. They turn off because of market incentives. When power prices start to increase, AKA it's, you know, 4 p.m. on an August day in Texas and everybody's cranking up their AC and the grid indicates, hey, we could use, or we have a supply demand imbalance here. We could use a little bit more power. Bitcoin miners are going to see that signal in the price intervals within ERCOT, and they are going to want to turn off because they don't want to be on past $200 a megawatt hour. You know, really in that $200 to $500 a megawatt hour range, you see a lot of Bitcoin mining curtailment, which essentially means they're turning off because they're price responsive. They are turning off because there's a slight supply demand imbalance and the grid could use that energy elsewhere.
Okay, so I understand, I think, what you're saying. I definitely understand absorbing excess energy and buying low because it's cheaper, and that makes a lot of sense. I would question, however, and again, I don't pretend to understand your business, so these are neutral questions.
Sure.
At the same time, you're running a business and not a charity. This is not something that is your fiduciary duty is not to the state of Texas or the grid, just like any other producer or business.
Correct.
No different than anyone else. So where there would be No, let's say like a Texas winter freeze.
Yeah.
Good example. You've got, you know, more than a day or two of not enough power for people. Is the Bitcoin operation going to just stop? Yeah. I mean, because you have to keep, you can't die. You have to keep going. You have to keep, you know, you have a constant mandate to continue operations. If you have to update every 10 minutes, right? Or you always have demand, I guess I'm trying to say, around the clock for what it is that you do, because people can participate from all over the world, right? So, yeah. So what happens then?
Yeah, it's a great question. And Bitcoin, Texas is the Bitcoin mining capital of the world, but it does happen all across the world. So even if all the Bitcoin miners turned off in Texas, which is about 20% of global Bitcoin mining, the other 80% in other places in the US and other places across the world, other energy rich countries, usually Bitcoin mining flows to low cost energy environments. They will continue to operate and the network will be unfazed. So it's very decentralized in that sense. You know, when we had Winter Storm Heather back in January and Bitcoin mining fell off across the US, but especially in Texas, they all curtailed because of the increased prices. Then, you know, the network wasn't phased. Essentially, all the other miners across the globe picked up the slack. And so it's a very resilient network in that sense. Now, during Winter Storm Uri, Bitcoin miners in Texas did turn off and turned off for multiple days. And not because we are a charity, but because incentives are what guide Bitcoin miners. Mm-hmm. And power price
was ridiculous.
Yeah. It was super high. And that is the number one cost input for our industry. And so they were off because they didn't want to go bankrupt.
So tell me, okay, going back to Bitcoin flowing to places that has a lot of power to offer, Texas is number one in the world. I'm just quickly curious, who's number two, three, four, five? Like, who do you see up there?
Yeah, other countries or other states?
Countries.
Okay, so other countries, you would see there's several places in Africa that have a lot of stranded hydro energy, large dams that were built, but there's not enough infrastructure to actually power the communities around it.
Really?
So Bitcoin miners will go in and they'll create a microgrid, and they'll be able to use that stranded hydropower, but also then provide power to the community. And as the community is able to buy more electrical appliances, have increased demand for power, the Bitcoin miners can curtail their usage and operate in a symbol. You know, there they may be on 24/7, 365 for the first year or two, but as the community starts to build out their electrical infrastructure, because they have this transmission, they have this economic engine driving transmission construction, which is quite expensive, the Bitcoin miner can then operate like it does in the developed world, like the US and like Texas, where they're a flexible load. Other places, you have like Paraguay, Argentina,
So not OPEC countries, not Russia?
Russia, certainly.
Okay.
You do see a lot of Bitcoin mining in Russia. You see a lot of Bitcoin mining in China. You really don't see a lot in OPEC countries because they're built to export their energy. They don't have an abundance of electricity because they haven't built a lot of combined cycle plants there. They're way biased towards, you know, LNG or, you know, exports of their oil resources. But you certainly do see it in Russia because there is combined cycle there and there's a lot of natural gas. And so the combination of the two means you have a low, you know, energy grid price. So it's not necessarily places that have a low cost of production of oil. It's places that have combined cycle, natural gas fire generation.
Okay. Okay. That makes a lot more sense to me now. All right. Interesting. So let's just go back to the U.S. I have your American map here. Texas is ahead by miles compared to other states. I can't see Alaska. The map cut off Alaska. But it looks like second place goes to Georgia, actually. And then North Dakota.
That's right.
Amazing. A few quick things that we didn't get to fully cover in the last two segments. Number one, off-grid Bitcoin miners are monetizing stranded and wasted natural gas, which is, you know, pretty cheap, I think. Converting it into electricity and mining Bitcoin on the site. Okay, that's one thing. So people are always talking about stranded gas and flaring gas, and they're angry, and you know, the environmentalists are chasing after it. So the first issue is that's one solution. You're saying it's a solution. We can use that rather than burn that or waste that or just, you know, let it fly away and rather than monetizing it. Then, and this is pretty exciting, Bitcoin is a decentralized and censorship-resistant asset, you say? You say it's the opposite of the CBDC, the central bank digital currency, and that's what the Federal Reserve's talking about. People are afraid of this for a lot of reasons, because the government gets to control then. You know, it's not like having dollar bills in your hands that you can do whatever you want with. People can cut you off from your money. Okay, not everyone fully tracks that. So, because what you're doing is digital. So people can actually, you know, track it, right? See where it went, who had it. By necessity, you have to be able to show exactly what people have and when. Explain why and how you're different from CBDC.
Well, right.
I should stop saying CBDC. It doesn't even say, it doesn't sound right. Central bank digital currency. People know what that is.
Yeah. So with the decentralized nature of the Bitcoin blockchain, you can see all the transactions, but they're going to anonymous wallets. So it's similar to me handing you a $20 bill. You and I know that transaction happened. The asset was transferred. We had to be in the same place at the same time to do it, but the government doesn't know. And of course, if that's a gift or something that's non-taxable, right? But if it's a business transaction, then we would report it to the IRS. But in this case, with Bitcoin being censorship resistant, the government, the U.S. government or any other government across the world, has no way of either controlling it nor knowing. They can see all this transaction volume, but they don't know who is sending it to who. It could be me sending it to you or me sending it to a pen pal in Afghanistan who, you know, is struggling. You know, maybe it's like a missions thing, right? And I can't get dollars to Afghanistan because of the closed nature of the country. It's a Muslim country, but I want to support, you know, a local Afghani Christian or something like that. So there are some components of it that allow it to be a, like a bearer asset, like, but I can transfer it over the internet. The government can't control it. Now, the central bank digital currency is the opposite of that. The government issues it from the Fed directly to the American consumer and then can track essentially every single transaction. You know, in China, they have one of these. They call it digital yuan, which is their currency. And they can essentially penalize people for purchasing things they don't like. They can impose negative interest rates on people's bank accounts. They could even distribute money in, say, a crisis, maybe like a natural disaster that has an expiration date, so that you force people to spend it quickly to stimulate the economy. There's just some perhaps 1984-esque use cases for central bank digital currency that I think in the U.S. we would be concerned about.
Okay. So, and I've had people on the show to talk about gold-backed currencies. I'm interested. Everyone's interested. And, you know, what can Texas do to try to protect its people from whether it's a CBDC or anything else, or if the dollar collapses for some reason? You know, with this fiat currency is very much in the hands of, in the eyes of many, irresponsible people. We yeah. don't trust the people who make decisions about the stabilization of the currency. So explain how, I went through your policy paper, which was very interesting. There's a lot of really, really interesting stuff in here. And you talked about enabling legislation that allows Texas to custody Bitcoin or other large market cap assets in the Texas Bullion Depository or similar institution. Okay, when people hear Texas Bullion Depository, they're thinking about gold and silver.
Right.
Like a Fort Knox kind of thing. So explain how Bitcoin can be contained or can be, what, because you use the word custody, I guess, housed in that facility. How would that work?
That's right. So it would really be held on a hardware wallet that's not connected to the internet, so it can't be hacked. So the cryptographic keys that control that digital wallet will be held in that small, you know, hardware device. So it's not like a large, you wouldn't need a large space. You could put it in, you know, one of the depository employees' safe or something. It's very small. But the concept, the analogy is, you know, gold for millennia has been a hard asset, an asset with a very, you know, finite supply. Bitcoin is even harder than gold because there's a hard cap. There will never be more than 21 million Bitcoin ever. Whereas gold, we're mining more gold all the time. But we're supportive of gold. We're certainly supportive of transactional gold, which is a bill that came through the legislature last year. Didn't make it all the way, but had some great backers behind it. And I think Bitcoin is sort of it's an essentially a digital gold. It's a gold for the internet age, a store of value that can protect our purchasing power against a debasing fiat system. We're not hoping for the dollar to lose its world reserve currency status. Certainly, we hope that that status lasts for decades. I think for, you know, for us, for our kids, for the whole world, for financial stability, the dollar must remain the world reserve currency. But what we see out of DC is disheartening. We see irresponsibility. We see an increase in the money supply, quantitative easing, and just the Fed growing its balance sheet at a rate that's unsustainable. Our debt to GDP ratio is similar to what Greece's was when Greece had their financial crisis years ago. So it's unsustainable, and we do need to have backup plans if the federal government continues down this path.
Yeah, I was in Greece when they had their budgetary crisis. Believe it or not, we flew there to look at real estate. Not me, but someone I know. And we got there expecting to see like these beautiful homes. And literally, there was 10 to 12 foot of trash lining the streets of Greece because there was no trash pickup because they were broke. And that is a very minor negative consequence of having a crisis like they had. So I would count yourself very lucky if that were the end of it. It would not be in our case because we are considerably larger and a little more linked in to the rest of the global economy. Okay, so if people want to learn more about what it is you're doing, and you've got so much policy here, and some of it passed actually and signed by the governor that I didn't have time to get to you, where do they go to find you? What's your URL?
Sure. We're TexasBlockchainCouncil.org. And one of the bills that passed that you mentioned was the flare gas bill. And we didn't get a chance to talk about it too much, but I'll say briefly, that bill clarified that there's no severance tax for any gas that's redirected from a flare to an on-site data center, whether that data center is mining Bitcoin or doing other things. So you have a lot of people, a lot of Bitcoin miners partnering up with oil and gas operators and essentially saying, hey, we'll bring our data center, our mobile data center, maybe it's a small 1 megawatt mobile data center, to your site, and we will take your excess gas that's maybe associated gas that you can't sell because there's no pipeline, or even if there is a pipeline, you're only getting $1.50 per MCF, and we will buy it from you. And if there's no pipeline, we'll buy it from you for a reasonable rate. If there is a pipeline, we'll buy it from you for X percentage more than the pipeline is paying you, and you don't have to pay all these pipeline midstream fees. And so a lot of oil and gas operators, you know, when gas was like $9 an MCF a few years ago during the Russia-Ukraine, the kickoff of that war, nobody was interested in this because they were making $9 an MCF. But if you're making less than two and you can make $7 or $8 an MCF mining Bitcoin, that's an interesting equation.
So let's imagine I am that oil and gas guy, and I'm like, okay, great, I could make more money with these guys. What happens when the next war kicks off? Oh, he's telling me I'm almost out of time. The next war kicks off and I can make more money again, not going to Bitcoin. How long do you lock them in for? I guess is what I'm trying to say.
It's contract dependent. So okay. If the oil and gas operator has a pipeline, then they do a short contract because they're worried. Yeah. But if they don't have a pipeline, it's just associated flare gas, then it can be a longer contract.
On your website, you talk about how it can actually protect the grid or reinforce the grid. So explain that.
We have some constraints, right? Energy is only as good, or the electron is only as good as the time and place that you can utilize it, right?
Right.
And so we have so much energy in West Texas, really across the state, but our transmission capacity and the time of day and the energy consumption patterns of, you know, societies all across the world don't necessarily always line up to, you know, our generation patterns. And with the Biden administration's federal subsidy on renewables, that creates additional problems because we have overbuilt renewables and then we have grid congestion. We have more generation than we can get to major population centers. And that wasn't just the Biden administration. That's been in play for a long time. So that's created challenges. There's not enough natural gas generation in the state of Texas because of those the market incentives around $30 a megawatt hour for every megawatt hour of renewables you have. So essentially, Bitcoin mining comes in as a location agnostic load. So sort of a load center, if you will, that you can put in parts of Texas where we have grid congestion, putting it on the opposite side of grid congestion to soak up that excess energy. And also, Bitcoin miners are time agnostic. They don't care when they run. The rest of us, we use a lot of electricity in the mornings and in the afternoons. Overnight, we hardly use any. And that's really hard for a grid operator because they have to be prepared for these big peaks. But then also, there's these troughs of low usage where the combined cycle generation, the base load generation, if you will, is going to be losing money because there's not enough demand. So Bitcoin miners are happy to soak up excess demand in the low demand times and in the low demand locations, and they're happy to turn off, and they don't have to be asked to turn off. They turn off because of market incentives. When power prices start to increase, AKA it's, you know, 4 p.m. on an August day in Texas and everybody's cranking up their AC and the grid indicates, hey, we could use, we have a supply demand imbalance here. We could use a little bit more power. Bitcoin miners are going to see that signal in the price intervals within ERCOT, and they are going to want to turn off because they don't want to be on past $200 a megawatt hour. You know, really in that $200 to $500 a megawatt hour range, you see a lot of Bitcoin mining curtailment, which essentially means they're turning off because they're price responsive. They are turning off because there's a slight supply demand imbalance and the grid could use that energy elsewhere.
Okay, so I understand, I think, what you're saying. I definitely understand absorbing excess energy and buying low because it's cheaper, and that makes a lot of sense. I would question, however, and again, I don't pretend to understand your business, so these are neutral questions.
Sure.
At the same time, you're running a business and not a charity. This is not something that is your fiduciary duty is not to the state of Texas or the grid, just like any other producer or business.
Correct.
No different than anyone else. So where there would be, let's say like a Texas winter freeze.
Yeah.
Good example. You've got, you know, more than a day or two of not enough power for people. Is the Bitcoin operation going to just stop? Yeah. I mean, because you have to keep, you can't die. You have to keep going. You have to keep, you know, you have a constant mandate to continue operations. If you have to update every 10 minutes, right? Or you always have demand, I guess I'm trying to say, around the clock for what it is that you do, because people can participate from all over the world, right? So, yeah. So what happens then?
Yeah, it's a great question. And Bitcoin, Texas is the Bitcoin mining capital of the world, but it does happen all across the world. So even if all the Bitcoin miners turned off in Texas, which is about 20% of global Bitcoin mining, the other 80% in other places in the US and other places across the world, other energy rich countries, usually Bitcoin mining flows to low cost energy environments. They will continue to operate and the network will be unfazed. So it's very decentralized in that sense. You know, when we had Winter Storm Heather back in January and Bitcoin mining fell off across the US, but especially in Texas, they all curtailed because of the increased prices, then, you know, the network wasn't phased. Essentially, all the other miners across the globe picked up the slack. And so it's a very resilient network in that sense. Now, during Winter Storm Uri, Bitcoin miners in Texas did turn off and turned off for multiple days. And not because we are a charity, but because incentives are what guide Bitcoin miners. Mm-hmm. And power price
was ridiculous.
Yeah. It was super high. And that is the number one cost input for our industry. And so they were off because they didn't want to go bankrupt.
So tell me, okay, going back to Bitcoin flowing to places that has a lot of power to offer, Texas is number one in the world. I'm just quickly curious, who's number two, three, four, five? Like, who do you see up there?
Yeah, other countries or other states?
Countries.
Okay, so other countries, you would see there's several places in Africa that have a lot of stranded hydro energy, large dams that were built, but there's not enough infrastructure to actually power the communities around it.
Really?
So Bitcoin miners will go in and they'll create a microgrid, and they'll be able to use that stranded hydropower, but also then provide power to the community. And as the community is able to buy more electrical appliances, have increased demand for power, the Bitcoin miners can curtail their usage and operate in a symbol. You know, there they may be on 24/7, 365 for the first year or two, but as the community starts to build out their electrical infrastructure, because they have this transmission, they have this economic engine driving transmission construction, which is quite expensive, the Bitcoin miner can then operate like it does in the developed world, like the US and like Texas, where they're a flexible load. Other places, you have like Paraguay, Argentina, the...
So not OPEC countries, not Russia?
Russia, certainly.
Okay.
You do see a lot of Bitcoin mining in Russia. You see a lot of Bitcoin mining in China. You really don't see a lot in OPEC countries because they're built to export their energy. They don't have an abundance of electricity because they haven't built a lot of combined cycle plants there. They're way biased towards, you know, LNG or, you know, exports of their oil resources. But you certainly do see it in Russia because there is combined cycle there and there's a lot of natural gas. And so the combination of the two means you have a low, you know, energy grid price. So it's not necessarily places that have a low cost of production of oil. It's places that have combined cycle, natural gas fire generation.
Okay. Okay. That makes a lot more sense to me now. All right. Interesting. So let's just go back to the U.S. I have your American map here. Texas is ahead by miles compared to other states. I can't see Alaska. The map cut off Alaska. But it looks like second place goes to Georgia, actually. And then North Dakota.
That's right.
Lee Bratcher is the president and founder of the Texas Blockchain Council. You're listening to The Jackie Daly Show.